You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 567 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Fosma Moon and Seth Miller. Gentlemen.
Hi.
Hola.
We're recording 30 minutes later today. Is this throwing you guys off? Foz is speaking Spanish.
Like, Foz is are we speaking something vaguely resembling Spanish?
Okay.
Hola. I don't think that's not where the emphasis is.
Really what threw me, but yeah.
Happy New Year. This is coming out, I guess, January 1st, 2026. Is that right?
Yeah. For our regular listeners.
I guess we should do like a wrap up. Like, should we do like a 2025 wrapped for ourselves?
Sure.
We should do that. Do you want to do that now or do you want to do that in the bonus topics? I think we can do it now.
I can do it now.
Okay. Do you guys have an easy way to like look up your stats quickly?
Sure.
All right. Who can do it first? Yes.
I'm showing 75 segments and 90,000 miles flown.
Button C.
That's missing two flights. That's missing my last 25 for 25. I almost said all you can jet. Jesus. Which is 25 years old now.
That's a long year.
When we're 18 years old. It has been a long year. So yeah, 77 segments and 94,000 miles roughly.
Wow. Okay.
Not bad.
How many airlines?
That's an excellent question. That I don't have. Do I? Maybe. Almost all JetBlue because of the 25 for 25, but Iberia, British Airways. Who did we fly to Barra on? What was that airline?
Gulf Air or Oman?
No. Barra.
Barra. Oh, that was Loganair.
Loganair. Thank you. Yeah. EasyJet American, from SAS, some Air Canada. Ooh, I flew Southwest a few times too.
Wow.
A Transcon, actually. I went all the way out west with them.
Wow.
I need to say with some catches. SATA, new airline for me.
That's the Azores.
Azores Airlines, yes. And Japan Airlines and ANA. So neither of those is new to me, but JAL first, definitely on the 351,000, which we'll talk about shortly. Definitely a highlight. Honestly, the 4-hour or 3-hour layover in the Azores coming home in October made me actually want to visit. Ryanair, too. Yeah. Enough that when our conference next year is also in Lisbon, strongly considering trying to drag Linnea along, make a vacation out of it, and do a few days in the Azores on the way back.
Nice. Yeah, we tried to do it.
Well, to be fair, we tried to do like 18 hours.
Yes, which is better than four.
Better than four. would have gotten to do two little excursions, not just one. Also, the main island you can drive around twice probably in 18 hours. So it's the small part. It was good. How many trips you do?
Foz, you go next.
149 flights, 310,057 miles. 60 airports, 24 airlines, and 50 hours of delays on United. 62 total.
62 hours total, 50 of those being on UA.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what you do. That's what you get going for 4 million miles.
And I guess that's the big news of 2025. You're at 4 million.
I am.
Have you actually slowed down since?
Yes.
Okay.
Drastically.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll let 2026 be the judge of that. All right. Mark this. Remind me in 1 year. minus 41 flights, 95,825 miles this past year. The average flight time, my total flight time was 8 days and 16 hours. So 23 airports, 10 airlines, 10 hours lost from delays, most of that Alaska.
You did just over 90,000 miles in 45 segments?
41 segments.
41 segments, yeah. So you flew almost twice as far as me average segment line.
So my longest flights were, let me look at my stats here.
Well, you did a lot of transcons and transatlantics, I assume.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I did LA, Frankfurt, Joburg, Sydney, DFW.
Yeah.
And then I did
bump your averages up.
And then I did Doha to San Francisco, which also helps. I also did San Francisco to Taipei. So
yeah.
Good mix of carriers. I got the same, you know, Loganair as you, but I also flew Qatar for the first time. Flew Scoot for the first time, flew Qantas for the first time. It was good. Flew Condor for the first time. It was good. So interesting year. I don't have anything really planned besides our beer due in January.
That's true.
Oh yeah, I have Newark, Singapore booked. We'll see if that happens. Then I have Taipei to Phoenix. We'll see if that happens. And then I have Santiago to Sydney. But see if that happens. And Foz is trying to convince me to go to, where are we going? Adelaide. Yeah.
You want to get that United flight before it could cancel?
Yeah. It's been very empty. So the turn has been very empty. What were you going to say, Foz? Sorry.
With Ed.
With Ed. We're going to try to do that with Ed. Yeah. If you want to come along, Seth, if you feel like going to Adelaide.
Oh, well, now that I know what's happening, maybe I will.
Kangaroo Island.
You know, Adelaide and Christchurch.
All right.
Foz basically just doesn't stop moving on these trips, if you didn't know. So
that's not completely true.
You get like a day in Sydney, and then you got to go to the next place.
I gave Ed the option.
All right. Let's talk about some news now that we've gone through that. Air India is dumping their 777LRs. And that has had some knock-on effects to their schedule. I can't tell why they're actually, no one's written up why they're actually dropping the LRs. Is it like a reliability thing?
Well, they're the Delta ones. There are five of them.
Okay.
And they're leased. So I think the leases are up.
Leases are up and they don't want to renew them?
Economically, it doesn't necessarily make the most sense. Air India can't exactly command a premium for their product.
Yeah. I mean, but they can command a premium for non-stops because they're the only carrier, and this is what this is affecting, is San Francisco, Mumbai, and San Francisco, Bangalore.
If you ask most people, they would rather go through the Middle East on a connection than take a non-stop on Air India.
Fair enough. Including you, right, Foss?
They can't even go to India, so that's a different problem.
So San Francisco, Mumbai, and Bangalore will go via Vienna and then or Calcutta. I think it rotates which one they go through. But the outbounds, so Mumbai, San Francisco, and Bangalore, San Francisco will both still be nonstop.
It's interesting that they can do Calcutta on some of them because that's not that far.
It's not that far, and it's hot and high, isn't it?
Is it going back to India that it stops in Calcutta?
Yes.
Okay, so then the hot and high doesn't matter.
The hot and high doesn't matter, but it's just, it is kind of strange because it's further east too, right? Like, isn't Calcutta in the northeastern corner?
I also wonder if the Russia situation played into that at all, given that they had two diversions this year.
I think it absolutely has. I think the Russia situation and Pakistan. I think Pakistan airspace being closed at one point and it being kind of an ongoing thing has really hurt.
Do they still route over? Were they still routing over Russia?
Even what they were. Yeah.
Yes.
So I guess challenge.
I mean, I guess now you go east over Europe. If the winds are good, you make it to Calcutta. Then if they're not, you go to Vienna or you just plan it out. That's maybe you walk east. I guess, you could go west if you're going to go over Calcutta.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a weird one. But
I mean, like Newark, Singapore still goes over Europe right now at times, depending on the winds. So, yeah. Anyway, it's an interesting problem for Air India. They're going to fly it on 777-300ERs now. And then you put in here a note, Seth, they're bringing back Delhi Rome in the summer.
Yeah.
So there's even Indian demand for Italy.
In the summer. There you go. I'm laughing at it because I flew that route some years ago. They had a mistake fare in business. I want to say Bangkok to Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Bangkok. If I remember correctly, that year was a wedding of some friends, and then other friends hung out in Chiang Mai and Chiang Rai, and then went to Rome for a few days after New Year's, and took that flight, went back when it was on a 787. I don't know what they're going to put it on for the restart, but it was an old 787 beat to shit and 4 hours late and all sorts of other annoying things, but it was like $250 in business class. So, you know, do what you got to do.
Yeah. You put up with the delay that.
That was also when we used to run a triangle route to Milan.
Oh.
And it was like, or maybe that's how we got it so cheap, is like you could book it with like an overnight to Milan onward, and or like the connection somehow. It was something funky about it, but either way, I know the Milan connection was there, and then like they made it a nonstop only. We're like, oh, well, that works in our favor.
You're like, take it, I'll take it. And then Air India 171.
A couple of weeks ago.
This was the crash. India and the NTSB are getting into it. What's the story, Fuzz?
Basically, the NTSB is accusing India of trying to do some cover up on and not being fully transparent about the investigation.
Okay. Sweet. I mean, I can't say I'm like super surprised. I'm guessing there's something in there that they don't want people to see.
Well, I mean, I think the preliminary information shed a fair bit of light on the situation, right? Someone cut off the fuel And that is not a good look for an airline that is trying to relaunch itself.
Yeah. Yep.
And this is the same airline that also lost a 737-200 for like 14.
we just parked it somewhere and forgot where it was.
Remind me of that story.
Just a couple of weeks ago, like, was it Calcutta? There was an airport or Hyderabad. Some airport was like cleaning up and it's like, hey, this old rusted out 737-200 is still parked on our ramp. We need to get them to remove it. And like called Air India, like, are you guys going to take this plane or what? We need to get it gone. And oh, you forgot to pay us rent for that parking space for 14 years or something. And then it's like, what are you talking about? That's not ours. And they went back and looked like, oops, it is.
Oh my God.
There was that one. And I think they flew a plane that wasn't properly insured.
Lovely. That's just great.
Like something slipped through one of their, you know, bits of paperwork and like the registration wasn't maintained for their insurance.
This could be why they're not renewing leases.
They forgot?
No, they just don't have the money. They had to pay some parking tickets.
Yeah. The administrative, shall we say, challenges there are not great.
Yeah. Let's talk quickly about delays today, I guess. Folks are traveling today. I don't know if you'll hear this in time. When are we going to publish this? Are you actually going to publish it on the 1st?
Well, yeah. And for Patreon supporters on Monday, which is like the 28th.
Okay. We're recording this on Friday, which is
the
26th. But it seems like the Northeast is in a little bit of a meltdown. So this will be fun to watch play out. I guess not fun for everybody, but fun for us.
At tender hour of noon on the 26th.
A tender hour of noon, and the snow hasn't actually started yet?
Nope, not for another 4 or 5 hours.
And the schedules are already kind of getting wonky with JetBlue and Delta. So,
well, Delta, partially because Detroit already got hit by the storm.
Yeah.
So that's part of why Delta's already feeling it. I mean, they're at a 10% cancellation rate, delayed rate, and a 5% cancel for the day.
Not good?
No. United somehow is managing to keep it together, which I'm wondering how long that'll last.
Chicago has stayed together? That's amazing.
United at the moment is only a 2% cancel rate at 71 flights and 10% delayed at 313.
Wow. Maybe it's the long taxi times at Chicago. They're putting plows on the front of planes.
No. If anything, it's short taxi times because of all the other cancellations. So they've got the padding built in.
Oh, man. And then I think the big question is, how does Delta deal with crews out of place, which is what affected them so much after CrowdStrike, right? So,
I mean, everybody deals with that all the time. So, yes. But yes, that'll be.
But this storm is supposed to go overnight into like midday tomorrow. So it's not like it's a few hours. It's going to be like a 12-hour ordeal.
Sweet.
So, yeah. Good luck out there, listeners. If you're coming back from your Christmas vacation and you run into this, we'd love to hear from you. So send us a note. Ty is getting their first A321neo.
They got it for Christmas. It's very exciting.
What are they going to do with it? Just regional stuff?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. Is this replacing A320s, or what are they trying, or is it new, net new for them?
I think it's net new. These are coming from AerCap, at least to start.
Okay.
There's some other, they've got like, I want to say 30 or so, 31 to be leased. Bangkok, Singapore seems to be the first route coming in late January. So it does have flatbeds, but, so it theoretically could go a little further, but I don't believe it's an LR or an XLR, just a regular Neo. So somewhat limited.
But from Bangkok, you could run that all the way into Pakistan and India.
But as you say, it's from Bangkok with a few exceptions. It doesn't actually limit you too much in terms of what you can do.
Yeah.
Relative to like the longer range, like even without the LR, you can cover most of Australia, not Sydney, not Melbourne, but, you know, Gold Coast and the West Coast are just fine. Basically all of the Middle East. So that's all of China. That was a market where the LR and the XLR didn't really actually buy that much.
I mean, would they, if they had an XLR, would they go to Sydney with it, you think? Or would they keep it? I mean, it seems like there's enough demand to Sydney or Melbourne that they would just fly a wide body, right?
Yeah. I mean, arguably, so yes, the XLR would reach that or reach into Europe. Mm-hmm. Which the regular range does not really get them. Arguably, I think you're right. They would probably just do more wide bodies especially like in Sydney where you're slot restricted and things like that. Having said that, Etihad put XLR or LR, I forget which one they got, the LR, just the regular LR, I think, with their first class suites into Munich as an additional flight.
Oh, They have the space. They have the rights to do that.
I mean, like slots or?
Well, because I thought Germany was like one of the countries where you, the reason like Emirates flew A380s was because Germany doesn't allow
a limited operation.
They may have had, they just hadn't fully used their allocated slots. I don't know. That release came out a week or two ago. So it's an interesting one.
It's an interesting use of a LR. I mean, I would have thought maybe Africa or something like that, but I guess it's got the range. So why not?
It's got the range and it's got that premium product where they're trying to pull, right, just a couple extra 100 bodies each week. I even think it's like 3 days a week. What, you know, it's a limited
bit, but it was an interesting use of that plane.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a JAL, Japan Airlines A350-1000 out of service. And these are the planes with the new first class, new business class. It got hit in New York by a Air Malta, A330, I think, in the windscreen area, with no indication of when it will be back in service. It's being worked on by Airbus.
Air Malta, in this case, has to be a charter, like a, I think it, at least something, right? Like,
I think it was HiFly was who it was exactly. So
HiFly Malta, which is even still chartered out to someone else, but yeah.
Yeah. And they were under tow maybe, and they got hit. The JAL plane was parked and the HiFly plane was being towed. Anyway, this has caused a whole set of cancellations for Japan Airlines. They have basically canceled Haneda, JFK on consecutive days. And then they've canceled the other routes on other days because I guess they're going to go back and backfill the JFK flight with these other flights because they're operating these without a spare.
What's interesting to me is not that they don't have a spare 350-1000, but they seem to not have a spare long haul plane at all.
Yeah. That's what's bizarre.
Although I guess if you're operating out of Japan and out of the United States and there are no passenger rights rules that you need to worry about, it's not as bad.
Yeah, but like
someone's going to get fired for this. You'd feel like.
I mean, like the A350, they have A350-900s. Yeah, it's the old product, but then you wouldn't have to cancel the flight.
Or Triple Evans.
But the 900s are domestic config, aren't they?
I thought they had some that still had the old three cabin. I'm not sure. Let me look.
Yeah, I mean, I know like JFK, one is a 351,000, one's a 777 daily typically.
Okay.
So, and by the Etihad service is daily, not a few times a week, but still. Yeah, and that is an interesting challenge, and especially that they were running their long haul operation without spares.
Yeah, Foz is correct. The 900s are all in a domestic config, which, by the way, is first has a first class and then a J cabin. It is a very tight.
I think part of the problem is I didn't realize this. They scrapped a bunch of 777-300ERs.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think they're just running lean on their wide body fleet and didn't account for an outage.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, because they're 789s, they have a true international product, but it doesn't have F. And then the 777-300s. That's it, really. The 788s are in a domestic config, I think, with some in a long haul. Yeah, there's a couple with long haul. So yeah, I mean, I think they're just limited by the number of planes they've got.
They do have a 300ER in storage as of May.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, they were using those on Seattle and Vancouver, I think, for a while. So, yeah, it's just kind of bizarre.
Yeah. They're not the only ones struggling, although theirs was sort of caused by someone else. Aer Lingus had an XLR hard landing at Dublin the other day.
Took it out of service?
Took it out of service.
Wow.
Landing gear replacement required.
3.3 Gs.
Wow.
Yeah, the rear gear did a little bit of a bounce with the nose down.
I wonder if someone gets fired for that.
I would have guessed not.
Yeah, I mean, maybe retrained. I don't know. It's kind of wild. So what are they doing? I mean, they have backfill for XLRs too, because that's what they use on their new routes to Pittsburgh and some of these other new ones.
I think they've got some slack and not all of those are running year round, which helps. I think some of them, like they were using their Neos into Heathrow because they had lower landing fees because they're quieter planes and more fuel efficient planes. And like they can skip some of that, cost them a little money, but they can skip some of that and get the same passengers moving. But I don't think they've had to cancel any of the transit, any of the long haul stuff.
Hmm. And Lucy, it's slow season.
Yeah, they've got a little bit of time to fix it before they get into the summer. Yeah,
and it's, you know, it will be grounded for a few days, but it's not like months.
I mean, hard enough to break the landing gear, or at least make them have to be replaced. Makes me wonder if the bulkhead is intact, but maybe it didn't hit that hard. I don't know. That's a lot of weight, a lot of G's to pull. So anyway, I guess like one last thing I want to talk about, and I'll get y'all's thoughts. I switched from AT&T this past week to Google Fi. I'm an iPhone user, so I was a little hesitant because I didn't know how this would work. It actually went really smoothly. So like my wife has Fi already, and she's like on one of their cheaper plans, and she was going over her data cap every now and then. It was kind of getting annoying, and I was looking at my bill, and we would basically save a monthly payment just by combining our two accounts and going up in how much data we got. So I said, let's just do that. And it's pretty seamless, pretty easy process. I waited until the Google Fi service was transferred, and then I canceled the AT&T, and everything's great. So
wow.
I'm really excited because it's not going to cost me extra to use the phone internationally, like what AT&T was charging, which was $12 a day. So I think it's a good move.
Yeah. What I would say is I've been on Fi for probably 10 years now, a while. And I've stopped using their international roaming mostly.
Why is that?
I'm on the pay-as-you-go plan, so the $10 a gig, not the unlimited.
Yep.
And I generally buy a eSIM when traveling, with rare exceptions or trips that are just too short or a layover somewhere that I also happen to need the cell service. And I'm paying even less as a result of that. Like I was in, when we were in Japan and Korea, like for $8 I got was the cheapest 7-day eSIM I could get for Japan through Arlo, which is not necessarily the best or the cheapest, but like it's pervasive and I've already got an account. So
yeah,
hard to justify switching. It mostly works most of the time, but even there, like it did, it just worked. And in Korea, like $10 for a 30-day plan for 5 gigs or something like that. I could have used less. I also don't stream a lot of movies or anything like that on my plan, but so there, like I definitely use like 3 or 4 gigs of data in Korea.
Maps take a lot of data.
And part of this, I knew I paid for it, so it didn't matter. Where if I had been on the Google plan doing the 10 gigs, sort of $10 a gig pay as you go, I would have been more conservative in my behavior.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think I'm still going to use an eSIM overseas depending on how long the trip is. Cause I have the unlimited. I'm going with the unlimited plan. It's just easier for us.
Yeah.
We still save money, which is good. And I'm still probably going to go with an eSIM. Here's the thing about eSIMs. I've tried the eSIM DB website to everybody's like, oh, just do this. Some of the apps and things are so wonky and data-y,
I'm not inclined to have a dozen different eSIM providers and sift through them to save 50 cents here and there.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, like a lot of people are like, well, if you're going for a long time, yeah, if I'm going for like 6 months, okay, I'll do some research. But if I'm going to go for a week, the 5 cents, 10 cents doesn't matter to me.
Could be a dollar, but still, I mean, I'm trying to remember which one it was. ANA maybe had a eSIM that you could buy on board that when I looked it up was like, yes, this would have been a dollar cheaper or something. It was like, but no, I just don't get I had it done before I left home. The only thing I find a little annoying about the eSIMs is I can basically only have one active at a time. And I have my Google SIM and then one other. So I have two. I still get text on my main number and all that stuff, and phone calls, which is important for me for work. But I don't, like, if I want to set up both the Japan and the Korea ones and be able to just flip the switch when the time comes, I can't.
Yep.
And so then how am I going to download it? Which service am I going to use? Like, that sort of thing gets a little wonky.
That is, to me, one of the bigger negatives because, this is an Arlo problem. It's just an eSIM problem. You have to have it set up, right? If you want to use it when you get on the ground,
right,
you have to have it already set up because it won't connect to the network necessarily to set up in country. So
if your service isn't activated, so you have to use your roaming to set it up or Wi-Fi when you land.
Exactly. And so it's kind of like, it's kind of a pain in the ass. I've done it using in-flight Wi-Fi, but then you're paying for the in-flight Wi-Fi most times to do this.
This last trip, while we were in the ferry terminal getting ready to board the ferry from Korea to Japan, I switched to Wi-Fi in the terminal, turned off the Korea SIM, activated the Japan one, and then turned the Korea one back on for our last couple hours when we were sailing and whatnot. And then
when we woke up in the morning, actually, we were in Japan that night. When we got to Japan, you know, 4 hours, 5 hours later, after we finished that crossing, deleted the Korea one and activated the Japan one again. But like, it was a bit of a annoying situation. But yeah, you either have to plan in advance or be off. And again, like, not the end of the world if you're offline for the first hour until you get into the airport, usually.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's more of a just like a minor inconvenience. Maybe a Netflix for eSIM. Like, I wish we had physical SIMs at sometimes. I wish we did.
Why?
Well, because then I could have the eSIM ready. Like, it just be in the phone. I could just pop it in, be done. I don't have to think about it.
Plug and play.
Like, there's like a physical, I don't know.
Yeah, because nothing says travel ease like carrying out a little binder full of all your little cards and having to swap them out.
Hey, maybe it's just the nostalgia in this like elder millennial of his CD, you know, vinyl case that he carried around in his car. Like, maybe that's just what it is. I don't know.
I'm all for physical SIMs. I support this.
You guys are both nuts.
Faz, you don't have this problem, though, do you? Because you're...
I do not.
Your Verizon's like grandfathered plan, right?
It's actually my T-Mobile plan, but yes.
Yeah, I was on that once.
Sometimes I do. In the end, I would have been paying a lot more for it.
Yeah.
But the problem now, right, with the companies have gotten a little more advanced, so there's different data priorities that you get.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of throttling that does happen. That's not technically throttling. It's just you're deprioritized. So in congested areas, it's slow.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with the eSIMs, right? A lot of these prepaid eSIMs are at the bottom of the stack from a priority standpoint, which is why they don't all work so well.
Yeah. And that comes back to my other point is like some of these fly-by-night eSIM providers with their own apps and stuff. Like, half the time I can't even get them to work. Yeah. So I'm just like, what am I paying? I'm not going to pay for this. Like, I'll just use something I know works, which is Airlo.
Yeah, I will share, like, Linnea and I using the exact same eSIMs. I bought them both on Airlo in my account. We have the exact same phone, running the same version of Android OS. While we were in Korea, she was on 5G the entire time, and I was on 4G the entire time.
Really?
On the same network. Same powers. Like, same service provider. Her phone showed 5G almost the entire time. Mine usually showed 4G. And, like, not a performance problem. Again, not streaming HD videos or anything where that mattered. I had one day where, like, for 6 hours, I didn't have service, and then it came back. So I turned her phone into a hotspot and tapped it off of hers for a while.
Yeah.
Trying to get it supported. And, like, it happened at night as we were going home and, like, woke up the next morning and it was fixed kind of thing. But,
there is still some wonky shit out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like for Jess, when she went to Germany, I got her an Airlo eSIM. Yeah. Then I also got her one for Heathrow, just in case she got stuck in Heathrow. Like, I got her one for the UK. And I just didn't activate it. I was like, if you need it, you can activate it. But she was like, it worked great in Germany. She was like, I got her like a 7 gig one or something. It was like a week. Yeah. For seven gigs for like $10.
Yeah.
It was great. It was when she was in the hotel, she was on Wi-Fi, and when she was out and about and she needed it, she had it. It was easy to use. So
yeah.
Not sponsored. We're not sponsored by them. Wish we were.
Could be. I have an affiliate link.
All right. Anything else you guys want to chat about?
Nah.
Nope.
We're for our Patreon supporters, we're gonna talk about year end delivery dates and the manufacturers trying to meet those dates. Before the end of the year, American starting a new route, rumor, and then Pakistani Airlines. We're going to talk about them as well. So stick around for that. If you're not a Patreon supporter, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. We will talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.